I'm Elizabeth Ames, and this is the Women in Product podcast. This episode is part of our series about the path to Chief Product Officer. It is one of 9 interviews we conducted with incredible women CPOs about their individual paths to Chief Product Officer.
In this episode, Rashmi Ramesh interviews Annie Pearl, previously the Chief Product Officer of Calendly. Annie recently moved to Microsoft as their VP Growth and Ecosystems. Before Calendly, Annie was Chief Product Officer at Glassdoor. Prior to that, she was Director of Product Management at Box. Annie is also a board member at Well Health Incorporated and WorkRamp. She has a BA from Claremont McKenna College and a JD from Santa Clara University School of Law. Rashmi is a member of the Women in Product community and currently a Director of Product. I'll let Rashmi and Annie take it from here.
First of all, thanks so much, Annie, and welcome to Women in Product. We are very, very happy to have you here and learn about everything you've done so far that could not just help people like me, but a lot of other people just like me. So I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very excited to be here.
Absolutely. So let's get started. I think to begin with, would love to get your thoughts on how did you get started in product management, especially when you had a law degree. So how did this happen? And did you always want to be a chief product officer?
Yeah, it's a great question. A bit of a non-traditional path to product management and then ultimately to the role I have today. But while I was in law school, I actually had the opportunity to work for a management consulting firm. So I was in law school expecting to become a lawyer. I had all intents and purposes of becoming a lawyer. But I got involved with this management consulting firm, and we specialized in working with startups. So I found myself spending a lot of my time with tech companies, with founders, with early stage, sometimes pre-product market fit, sometimes post-market market fit companies. And so I could tell I was getting much more interested in technology and the idea of building companies and products than I was law. So after law school, I graduated law school. I did pass the California bar, just to make sure that I always had that ability to go practice law if I wanted to. And then I actually went kind of the unconventional route at the time. I didn't join a law firm. I joined the founding team of a startup. This was back in 2009. We were called Expert Financial, and we were trying to create a stock market for private companies. So trying to create an actual kind of liquid exchange of pre-IPO shares. And so we raised capital, we hired some engineers, and I took the role of leading product management. So that's really how I got my career started, was really just kind of doing things at an early stage startup where you're going from 0 to 1. And, from there, I had various roles in product management at Box and then Glassdoor, where I eventually became the CPO, and then most recently joined Calendly as the CPO back in 2021.
That's awesome. And while you moved into product management at the first of your companies, do you always think that you wanted to be a chief product officer, like continue in the same product with the product focus?
Yeah. So, I don't think I knew much about product management when I joined the early stage startup. And in fact, product management as a discipline, I think, really has evolved a lot and become so much more dominant since even back, in 2009 when I started. So I didn't necessarily know I wanted to go into product management. But once I did, I really fell in love with it. Lots of different aspects of it, but really, really deeply understanding users, understanding the problems of users, the opportunities that exist to make their lives better and easier, and then building, great solutions to those problems. So I fell in love with the sort of user value and problem solving that came along with product management. One of the things that I've tried to do a lot of in my career, and I don't know if it has been totally intentional, but looking backwards, which is always easier, I have tried at various points in my career to identify opportunities that may not have made sense at the time, or if you were to look at it from the outside, you might have maybe scratched your head or it wasn't necessarily the most logical next step. But for me, it was an opportunity to round out my skill set in areas where I didn't have experience before. So I'm just a really big believer in kind of going after opportunities that give you experiences and skill development that may not look like a very clear ladder. You know, for example, going from law school to being part of the founding team of a startup, right? It was not the safe bet, but I knew the learnings would be unparalleled. You know, when I left our startup, I went to Box, you know, a B2B SaaS company, cloud storage, enterprise product management. I knew nothing about that, but I knew that I would learn a lot around how to scale a product team and a product, given where Box was in its growth. And then when I went from Box to Glassdoor, I went from B2B SaaS to consumer and a kind of a consumer marketplace. I really wanted to round out that skill set around, you know, not just understanding the B2B buyer, but also the consumer. And then, you know, from Glassdoor to Calendly, a product-led growth business. So I've really tried in my career to look at, you know, where do I not have experience today that I think would benefit me in terms of being a better product leader and going after opportunities that may not have seemed like the most logical next step at the time. But now you look backwards and you can kind of see how it all added up together to help provide me with a, you know, hopefully a pretty broad set of skills.
Oh, that's amazing. I think there's a lot to unpack in just what you said. And I'm sure that we have a lot more questions around that. But to begin with, I know you mentioned the product management taste was from the consulting firm that you were a part of. Apart from that, were there any other detours or pivots that you thought was, you know, kind of crucial for your next steps, even though it could be some of the unconventional paths? Are there any other pivots or detours that you think was important?
You know, the one that comes to mind to me was actually when I was at Glassdoor. Originally, I was brought on as our VP of B2B product. And one of the products that was in our portfolio was a self-service product. And at the time, Glassdoor was very much, the business model was more around selling into, you know, mid-market, SMB, mid-market and enterprise customers with a direct selling motion. And this was the first time that we were creating more of a self-service business and motion. And so, you know, the product was in my portfolio. And so in many ways, I was responsible for the success or the failure of it. And one of the first things that I sort of identified was, you know, in order to really make this product successful, we actually are going to need dedicated folks and teammates from marketing so that we can actually talk to the self-service buyer, right? We need dedicated product marketing to talk to the self-service buyer. We need dedicated support team who can really help these online customers who don't have any sort of, you know, customer success manager. You know, we may need to think about an online sales team for kind of a low touch sales model. And so pretty quickly, I sort of said, I think this actually needs to look a little bit more like a business unit and be run a little bit more like a business unit, because at the end of the day, it's a very clear revenue line where, you know, users come in through the funnel and they convert and then they're paying customers. And so I felt responsible for the actual revenue, but I didn't necessarily feel like we had the right structure in place. And so maybe less of a pivot as more, you know, I kind of worked with our CEO at the time and to ultimately sort of structure it so that I could really run it and lead it through more of that kind of what you might call general management lens. And that I think was a really, really great learning experience for me, just to have that kind of accountability and ownership over the number that, you know, benefited me when I then moved into the CPO role and you know, also when I came over to Calendly.
That's awesome. So one thing that you just touched upon was if you take a step back, how did you really think about choosing all these opportunities? As you nicely mentioned, you started with, you know, the finance, from the finance startup and then into a B2B and then a consumer B2C. How did you kind of think about these opportunities and what kind of self-reflections or things that you did on your end to figure out, hey, you know, I want to go here, or that you nicely put as it seemed unconventional then, but makes a lot of sense now?
Yeah. You know, I think there's probably two aspects to this. One is the skill set angle, which I already kind of touched on, which is, yeah, that doesn't necessarily have to be moving from company to company, right? It can be even within your own company and the opportunities that you seek out within your role, where you might take on a project or an initiative that may not be directly within your, you know, sort of sphere of ownership, but you know it's going to enable you to acquire skills that you may not have or experiences that you may not have. And so I think it doesn't always have to come from hopping to go find those experiences. I think you can absolutely get them. So I think that's one angle, which is just really getting clear and crisp to yourself on what do I want to learn with this next role, or if I'm in this role with these experiences I'm trying to, you know, take on. And I think the second is, once you've sort of identified that and you're talking to potentially different companies, I think for me, at least, what I've always, the lens I've always thought through is the product itself, right? Is this a product that I want to work on? I really, really am fascinated by this problem space. I want to live and breathe it. So there has to be an element of connection to the product and as sort of like first and foremost, right? The second for me, at least in the evaluations I've done, is the stage of the company, right? And so what you're doing as an early stage product manager, a company at an early stage startup, is very different than the product management you're doing at hypergrowth, which is very different than late stage growth, which is very different than, you know, a scaled, you know, big tech. And so I think getting really crisp and clear on what type of product management work do I want to be doing, and identifying where a company is in its growth curve to align with what the type of work you want to do. And so for me, both Glassdoor and Calendly, they were kind of what you might call late stage growth companies. You know, what got you here won't get you there. Across lots of different facets, right? And the problems and the challenges that come when you're a late stage growth company, everything gets more complex. You oftentimes have to go from single product to multi-product. You're thinking about international expansion. You're, you know, growing and scaling a team. Your processes have to change. So for me personally, I was kind of looking for, you know, late stage growth companies that would offer a set of challenges and opportunities based on the stage of the company. And then the last for me, you know, as for most people, is people, right? And the people that you work alongside of, and, you know, particularly in the CPO role, the CPO and the, you know, founder CEO relationship is really critical. And so finding a CEO may or may not be the founder who you feel like you can have a really strong partnership, I think is another piece that I've looked for when I've been pursuing various opportunities.
That's awesome. So in that statement that you just mentioned, was there anything you wished you knew the second time as being a CPO for Calendly that you knew the first time?
Okay, great question. You know, I think probably the lessons that I've learned, that I learned as the CPO of Glassdoor, that have now sort of evolved in terms of how I've approached it the second time, they go across a couple different areas. I think the first one is on the people side, just how critical it is to get a strong product leadership team in place, and how much of an unlock it is to be able to do that, to do your role most effectively. So, you know, when you go join an organization as a CPO, you've got lots of different, you know, challenges and opportunities that you're sort of, you know, navigating between, right? You've got product challenges, you might have people challenges, you might have process challenges, and hiring, you know, is one of those that I think it takes a lot of time, but it's one of those items that going into the role the second time, having a laser focus on, if I get a strong leadership team in place, it will unlock the ability for me to be most effective in my role. And then you hire a great leadership team and then they hire great people. And it's sort of this, continual benefit type of investment. So on the people side, that's probably one thing I approached differently the second time. I think the second is on the process side. You know, we talked a little bit about different phases of a company's growth. And I think, you know, you have to consistently be monitoring your sort of quote unquote processes and making tweaks as the company evolves, right? What worked when you were just one product isn't going to work when you have multiple, right? What worked when you're just, you know, serving the United States isn't going to work when you're serving, you know, customers across the globe. And so I think you have to be comfortable, you know, changing things up pretty frequently and adapting to the new reality so that your processes can actually be in service of you delivering better products and not, you know, something that slows you down or, you know, we're just checking boxes because this is the process that we've always used in order to build a product. So I think that's the second. And then maybe the last for me is in terms of the actual product itself, you know, the reality of how long it takes for a bet to pay off. You learn that the first time of, you know, you say you want something to be successful and driving revenue in 3 years, you probably want to start working on it, you know, in year one, at least laying the foundation to test your way into, you know, whatever the solution might be to the area you're going after. And so just knowing how long it takes for new product bets to play off, laying that foundation sooner rather than may appear to be needed is probably sort of the last area of lessons learned from time one to time two.
Oh, that's awesome. And why be a CPO for a second time? What really attracted you from a Calendly position perspective?
You know, I think at the end of the day, I love building great products and building great teams. And so, you know, it's pretty much a dream job to have the opportunity to work on great products that serve, you know, customers and solve for their problems, and then the opportunity to build and scale and grow great teams. So it was hard for me to imagine another role that would be as kind of professionally satisfying after having gone through the CPO role once. And so I sort of said, let's do this again. Let's go back to a bit of an earlier stage company and kind of do it all over again. So why do it for me was I love the job. I love the role. And I couldn't imagine doing anything else at the time. And I still feel like I have more to give, you know, in the role.
Well, that's really inspiring, actually. I mean, double clicking a little bit more on that now, talking about the preparation to actually become a chief product officer. I know you touched upon a little bit as you're moving up across the different companies and the different kind of skill sets. But over the course of the years, what were some of the critical skills that you actively looked to seek during the course of the time to prepare for a CPO position?
Great question. To me, there's really maybe call it three different areas of what the change is when you go from whether it's a VP of product or a couple clicks down from the CPO into the CPO role. I think the first is you go from being a functional leader to an executive. And what that means is, you know, you're not just responsible for your function any longer. You need to have, you know, a deep understanding of the business, the ins and outs of how the business works. You need to be able to form an opinion and weigh in on a diverse set of topics across the company, right? You're now making decisions on behalf of the company, not just the function. And I think you have to level up and think about the greater good of the company as the most important, you know, sort of criteria for how you make decisions. So I think that's the first is it's this shift from I own product and I lead product and I lead my product team to I'm an executive at the company and I need to be well-versed in how the other departments operate, you know, the numbers, how the business, the mechanics of the business and actually, you know, sit at that executive table and be able to weigh in on a diverse set of topics. So I think that's the first. I think the second is hiring. You know, you go from, you know, a lot of ICPM hiring, you know, maybe if you're in the VP role, depending on the company size, you also have managers of managers. So maybe you've done some managing of managers, but I think when you become CPO, you know, your ability to hire great product leaders, you know, becomes critical. And oftentimes, and this has been the case for me at both Glassdoor and at Calendly, you might also lead other functions like design and research. Mm-hmm. And so a big part of the role is now hiring functional leaders in a function that you don't necessarily have as much experience in, right? You know, I've never been an IC designer or a researcher. And so I think hiring and the way you hire and build out with a focus on the product leadership team is a pretty big shift from just hiring ICPMs. And then maybe the last one is just, you know, this evolution from really being held accountable to execution to your main job is vision and strategy, right? You go from primarily being responsible for, of course, you have influence on vision, you have influence on strategy. You may even have a strategy for your own product area, but at the end of the day, your job is execution and making sure that, you know, we're shipping the features and the functionality that we said we're going to ship that actually makes the impact we said we were going to make, you know, with to hit some goal in service of the company. Two, I'm now responsible for where are we going, right? What is this product going to evolve to in the next 3 to 5 years? And sort of what's our product strategy that the teams can then use to really do their roadmap planning? So I think all of those are pretty big shifts in terms of how you think about your role. And so it's, you know, various levels of training, right? There's on the job training. There's certainly lots you can read around how to do it, but there's also a lot of things you just have to kind of do by doing them and kind of learning on the job as well.
And that's awesome. You hit upon a great point there to being able to build not just the PM function, but even the UX and the design and those auxiliary functions as well. So how did you learn to build those teams as well as, you know, as a chief product officer?
Yeah, I think that it really starts with hiring great functional leaders for those disciplines. And then, you know, once you've found your head of design or your head of research and you've, you know, found the best the best in class leader for that area, then I think it's really important to empower those leaders. You know, sometimes we have a tendency to when we don't necessarily have as, we've never done the function before, or we don't have as much context, you can kind of go either way, right? You can either go on to go really deep in the details because you don't necessarily know enough to, you know, to know enough what's going on, or you can sort of hire the right people and empower them and then hold them accountable ultimately to whatever results you need them to drive. And so I tend to lean more towards hire great people, functional leaders who are best in class and experts at their discipline, and then really empower them and create some milestones to sort of check in around, you know, are they being successful in the way I need them to be without, you know, sort of being involved in a lot of the day-to-day decision-making. And I think the last thing is your job then as the CPO, if you do have different functional leaders, is all about connecting the dots, right? And it's all about that glue between, okay, if we have, you know, some sort of product area that we want to go invest in a couple different quarters, well, we better start doing the research and discovery on that this quarter, in which case we need to make sure that there's design resources and there's research resources and there's a product manager, right? And so where, from where I sit, a lot of the work is connecting the dots between these various functions to make sure we're all kind of one well-oiled machine.
Yeah. And in that, especially while staying on the topic of building these teams, getting the right people in the teams, any learnings from there, I wouldn't say failures per se, but any learnings from there that, you know, you took through every role pretty much as you were reaching the CPO?
Yeah. You know, I think a lot about hiring teams is no different than kind of a sports team where, you know, you want to have, everyone can't be the pitcher, right? Or everyone can't be on offense, right? You need a balance of offense and defense. And, you know, depending on who you're playing, you're going to rotate in your, you know, the right players to match the competition. And so I think that, you know, hiring product teams to me is pretty similar in that you want a very diverse set of skills and backgrounds and experiences that you can draw on depending on the type of product problem that you're trying to solve. And then I think it really also evolves as the company goes through those different phases of growth that we talked about, right? When you're an early stage company, pre-product market fit, you know, the role of product manager is a lot of times to just execute with the right, just execute. And so, you sort of, that profile of product manager is very different than maybe when you have product market fit and now you're kind of moving into hyper growth. And a lot of the product development work is, how do I make this thing that's working continue to work, right? How do I create predictability around our roadmap? How do I make sure that we're well integrated into the plans of the rest of the company? And then, you know, you move into kind of late stage growth, and now it's all about multi-product portfolios and international expansion and product market fit expansion. And so depending on where you are in that journey, I think you will need various different skill sets of product managers. And so I would say, you know, to close out on your question, maybe lessons learned is, if you have a bias for a certain archetype of product manager, you know, I think be really clear and crisp on where you are in your kind of your product and your company's growth curve to make sure that you have a good balance of skill sets based on the you know, competition in terms of what you're going up against around what you need to be building and why.
Well, that's great. That's really great. And if you are, let's say, a step or two away from being a CPO, maybe, you know, senior director or VP of that sort, how does, or what kind of skill sets should someone acquire in that position, you know, when you're just a step or two away from being a CPO?
Yeah, a little bit of what I touched on earlier of, I think, you know, if you think about going from this functional leader to the executive seat at the table, a lot of the skills there are around, you know, just business acumen, understanding the business, you know, what are the drivers of the business, and what role does product play, but also how do the other functions play within the business? And so I think, you know, trying to make sure, even if you're not in that role, there's certainly still a lot you can do to learn around, you know, how the business works and what role you might need to play if you were to get the seat at the table. You know, I think on the hiring side, you know, you've gone from maybe just IC hiring to now you're starting to do, if you're in that two clicks away, you're starting to do the manager hiring. And so I think, you know, doing it through the lens of what would this look like if I was hiring my product leadership team, and kind of thinking of it through the lens of, you know, it's managers are managers now, but this would be my product leadership team when I get to the next level. And what is the difference between the types of managers that I would want to hire in this role versus when I, you know, sort of get to the CPO role. And then lastly, you know, the execution to kind of product vision and product strategy change. you can do that in your role, right? As I mentioned, it's not that, you know, every function or product area can have their own product vision and their own product strategy that kind of layers up into something that's more very cohesive. And so I think you can practice, my point is you can really practice those skills even without the title in ways that will set you up very well to be able to then when you get the role, you've already kind of done it at a maybe smaller scale as part of your function. But I think a lot of it is a bit of a mind shift change from, you know, my only job is a functional leader, it's delivering product, to, you know, really thinking much more broadly around how can product and the decisions we're making within my product area be in service of the larger company vision, the larger company strategy, and our overall kind of needs of the business.
Oh, that's very well said. Thank you for that. And in that sense, any resources for learning or training that you would recommend that maybe you went through?
You know, there's so much formal training out there, which is amazing to see, right? There's Reforge, there's Silicon Valley Product Group, there's Product Talk, there's Women in Product, podcast newsletters, right? There's so much, it's almost overwhelming.
Right.
But I would really start, goes back to, you know, identifying what are those skills that you're specifically looking to develop, and really finding, you know, what are the courses or the podcasts or the... Name your publication for that. I think it can get very overwhelming to look at all the resources out there and not know where to start. But if you get really crisp and clear of like, okay, I've done a lot of consumer, but I've never done B2B. You know, I want to really go learn about those business models. Or I've been more of a feature PM and I'm looking to build out my growth skill sets. You know, maybe I'll go take a Reforge course. So I think really important to, you know, chart your own journey based on what are the skills. And then the second thing is, you know, on the job learning, of course, but I think one of the best things you can do for your career is work for a manager who is going to focus on giving you growth opportunities that are beyond what you think you can do. And when I look back, the kind of step functions in my career have really come from when a manager pushed me to take on a project or expand my role in an area that felt like, you know, kind of outside my comfort zone, but ultimately that helped me to develop new skills and experiences. So I think, you know, so much more important than even, you know, sort of picking what company you go to or what the actual role is who am I working for? And is this someone who's going to create on the job learning opportunities for me to grow my career? Because you can read a lot and listen to a lot, and that's all great and important, and you can't really beat on the job learning. So I'd say really focus on trying to find a manager who can help create those growth paths for you.
That's awesome. And any examples or any situations of how you kind of found such folks who would really push you and push you to the next level to really get that done? Any tips there for?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's luck, and then there's being proactive, right? So I was fortunate in one of my roles to have a manager who did this for me at Box, and, you know, sort of identified an opportunity for me to expand my skill set outside of sort of the world that I had been living in, and pushed me, and, you know, during times when I sort of had self doubt, or you know, we talk a lot about imposter syndrome, maybe where I had imposter syndrome. And then I think as you're thinking about finding new roles, so some of it's luck and who the manager is that you have today. Right. I think then as you go find new roles, I think you can push a lot during the interview process on the, you know, hiring manager to help, you know, sort of request that they give you really specific examples of how they've invested it and created on the job learning opportunities for folks that they manage, and, you know, make it a really clear and important part of your job seeking process. It's not just about the company or the product or the role or the salary, but actually the manager themselves.
Well, that's a really great tip. Thank you for that. And in this whole process, what was the hardest barrier to break in order to become a chief product officer in your experience? And why was it hard?
Yeah, this is the classic, you know, once you haven't done it yet, you know, it's hard to get. And then once you've done it, you get all the calls. and so it's in, you know, also similar to board work. It's, you know, when you haven't done board work, that's always the limiting factor to getting a board seat, and then you get a board seat, and then, you know, the world opens up to other board seats. And so I was really fortunate in my sort of career up to the CPO role, where I was promoted internally for my first CPO gig. Mm-hmm. So I joined Glassdoor as the VP of B2B product. And then we got acquired. And as part of that acquisition, our CPO left and I got the opportunity to take over and lead the product team. And so mine was, you know, was really an internal promotion. And so I think what that does for you is that, you know, you already have the relationships and the credibility that usually take months and years to develop. And so, you know, that starts you off on a really good foot. You also don't have to learn a new business or a new product or a new market. So you ramp much more quickly in the role. Mm. And then I think you also have a more of a realistic expectation of what's needed for you in the role. So there's no right path, but I think oftentimes the internal promotion path, and you have to get lucky, right? But I think it's often overlooked because folks tend to move to new companies as like the way to get promoted, do so quickly. But I think if you're in a position where you think there's, you know, a path towards upward mobility into a product leadership role, that can often be, you know, potentially not just a more successful path in the sense of potentially getting that role, but I think you actually are set up to be more successful in the role than coming in from the outside as potentially your kind of first gig.
Oh, that's an awesome point there. And how were you recruited for Calendly? Is this something you approached, or how did this happen for you?
Yeah, so I was had been at Glassdoor for about 4 years. I had an incredible you know, time in that role, and was really looking for to kind of go back to a bit of an earlier stage company and do it all over again. So I was working with an executive recruiter, and one of the roles that they were hiring for was the Calendly role. So an executive recruiter reached out to me, and that's how I had the introduction into Calendly.
Oh, that's awesome. And I think definitely you mentioned about how it's important from a CEO standpoint, how the relationship you build and the kind of relationship that you had with them. Anything around that, you know, for folks, how do you really work with the CEO? How do you make this as a team?
Yeah. So I think what tends to happen is CEOs will sort of, you know, get to a place where the company's scaled really fast and they, you know, try to hire out their executive team. And so they go to hire a CPO. And I think one of the challenges that tends to happen is CEOs either aren't clear on what they're trying to hire for, or they are clear on what they're trying to hire for, but it's not actually in line with what the product leader wants to do. So I'll give you examples. I think, you know, oftentimes founder CEOs will think they have a gap in, you know, execution, and really it's a gap in sort of vision and strategy. And so they go hire an operator when really they needed a visionary, or, you know, vice versa, right? They go hire the visionary when really they just needed a great operator, because the role that the CEO, you know, wants to continue to play and should continue to play is to be that visionary. And so I think, you know, getting really crisp and clear on, you know, from the CEO who you might go work with on what are the skill sets that they're really looking for? What was the archetype of the type of product leader that they're trying to bring in, and what kind of gaps are they trying to close? That's the first step. And then I think the second is you, as the potential CPO, making sure that you have an honest assessment of what do you want in the role, right? There's some CPOs who really love operations and the execution, and they're very happy to have a partner who's their CEO, who's really driving vision and strategy, and vice versa, right? Others really want to own that vision. And so, if, you know, be honest with yourself around where do you sort of spike from a skill set perspective, but also an interest, because the worst mismatch is when, you know, sort of that's not clear. And then you get into the roles and, you know, the product leader thinks they signed up for one role and the CEO thinks they hired the product leader to do something else. And then no one's happy. And that just trickles down into the, you know, the product team. And, you know, you can kind of feel it everywhere. So I think it's just, you know, making sure you're really crisp upfront around what is the, you know, sort of what are the skills that the company's hiring for, and do those match with where you want to be as a product leader?
Oh, that's an awesome wisdom, I would say. Thank you so much for that. And in this process, how did you equip or learn yourself for the board approvals? Because that's one of the huge part with respect to hiring a CPO or any leadership position in the company, I would think, right? So,
do you mean board in terms of me presenting to the company board or joining boards?
To the company, basically with Calendly, for example, I think one of the rounds of discussions would be with the board for you to come on board. So let's start with that for now.
So I think, you know, when I, anytime you're preparing for a board meeting or any meeting where, you know, you don't necessarily know what the questions are going to be, I think, you know, a couple different thoughts. I think the first is going through an exercise beforehand. Oftentimes it's called a pre-mortem versus a post-mortem, where you're sort of like, what are all the things that could have gone wrong in this board meeting? What are all the questions that they might ask that I don't necessarily know the answer to? And really going through like a pretty detailed outline of like, what are all the areas that I feel less confident in, that if I were asked on the spot, I'd be able to answer well. And so I think that's the first piece, is like kind of go through that exercise of like, okay, the board meeting was a total failure, right? Why? What are the things that could have gone wrong? You know, was it my presentation skills? Was it the content of my presentation? Was it the delivery? Or was it this set of questions that they asked me that I don't actually have the, you know, don't currently know the right answers to, and let me go get those before the board meeting? So I think that's the first, is really, you know, kind of going through that process of what's the worst case scenario, and how do I then de-risk each of those? And how do I make sure that, you know, my delivery is great, my presentation is great, I have the set of questions that I, you know, don't feel confident answering, and I know how to answer them. So I think that's one. And I think the second is learning what your answer is to the questions you don't know, because, you know, you can't know everything. And so board members will ask you questions. And I think if you have a really confident, kind of canned answer to how to respond to something that you don't have the answer to, and, you know, with how you're going to follow up and get that answer, then I think it relieves some of that pressure too, where in the moment you may feel like, well, I don't know how to say I don't know this, but I don't actually fully know the answer. And so you give some sort of mediocre response that sounds like you don't really know what you're talking about, but you're too afraid to say you don't know what you're talking about. And so I think the more you can, you know, get that phrase, whatever that phrase is for you, that feels really comfortable, you shouldn't be expected to know everything on the spot, but you should be able to, you know, have a follow-up and have confidence, the board have confidence you're going to come back with an answer.
That's awesome. Thank you. And from a CPO perspective, once you are a CPO, what are the responsibilities? I know you talked about being able to think about the products, not just as a product or a function, but more at the company level. What are the describe the responsibilities as a chief product officer? And I know we touched a little bit upon how it's different from a VP of product, but really describe the responsibilities as you see. And how has it been different from being a CPO at Calendly versus Glassdoor?
In terms of overall responsibilities, I think I've used this bucketing already in this conversation, but I like to think about people, process, and product. And so on the people side, right, your job is to create the best product team, you know, that you can on this planet. And so, you know, I think the responsibility there, it's again, it's both getting that strong product leadership team in place, but it's also creating a culture of a couple different things. I think one culture is, you know, of finding ways to make sure that the talent that you have and the high caliber talent you have is engaged. So oftentimes that can come through making sure that you have a really empowered product team, that everyone's super clear on what their roles are and what they're being asked to deliver to the business, and that you really let product managers own a problem space and, you know, sort of hold them accountable to a metric. And so, you know, one part of the culture is ensuring that your high caliber talent that exists already, you know, wants to stay. And then I think the second is, how do you really attract new talent? And a big part of, I think, attraction and also retention is, how do you create a culture where, you know, you can sort of say, come work with me on this team, and I will, you know, the opportunity that you go to take after this will be so far superior to anything you would have gotten without having the opportunity to work here. And so, like, I like to think through the lens of, how do I help create, you know, career accelerating opportunities for folks who come on the team. And then I think that just that brings in the best talent, and then that helps retain the talent because they know that they're growing and they're sort of step functioning, you know, up levels in their career by spending time, you know, on your team. So I think that's the first, is a lot around people and building, you know, the talent, but also creating a really, really great product culture. I think the second piece is, you know, on the process side, like, you kind of go from being part of the process, right? Or at the mercy of the process, to you're responsible for deciding, are these the right processes? And, you know, you're now the one to say, you know, I think we should iterate on this process, or I think we should develop this new process because I'm seeing challenges that are happening in this, you know, part of our product development lifecycle. And so I think you go from being kind of part of the process to, being in charge of in partnership with, you know, the whole product team, but, you know, being responsible for making sure that all your processes are the right ones and that they're, you know, not slowing people down and that they're actually impactful. So I think that's one bucket. And then the last one is on the product side itself is, you know, mostly just that transition of, you know, you're not just responsible for execution. It's really all about that, you know, product vision and strategy. And your number one job is to create that North Star, make it really clear where are we going and how are we going to get there, and then kind of help build the team to help get you there and support the team to execute, to deliver the outcome. So that's kind of the three kind of, and ultimately, I guess, to close out on the product side, it's your job is to deliver impact, right? And so you're not held accountable for releasing features. You're held accountable for what's the actual impact that you're able to drive, you know, through your product effort. So I think that's kind of the on the responsibility side. From the differences between, for me, Glassdoor and Calendly is really more around business model. So Glassdoor, you know, is a consumer marketplace. And so, you know, most of the revenue for Glassdoor comes through advertising, right? The more traffic you get to the platform, you know, the more you can, you know, sort of get those consumers in front of, you know, employers, and if they apply to jobs, you know, that's sort of the advertising model is the business model for Glassdoor. For Calendly, you know, we're more of a product-led growth SaaS company. And so we actually, you know, it's a subscription business, so very different than an advertising business. And so the reason I call out this distinction is there's very different product challenges that come from those business models, right? And when at Glassdoor, you know, traffic and getting job seeker traffic to the site was incredibly important, right? And so we were really constantly trying to help attract and acquire traffic to the platform, because ultimately we could then serve them up potential jobs they might want to apply to. And if they apply to those jobs, you know, we're able to monetize the traffic in that way. And so that's a very different problem set of than Calendly, where traffic actually comes to us for free, right? It's a viral product. When people use the product, they introduce the product to new people who then use the product. And so we actually, you know, acquisition is not, you know, sort of consumer acquisition is not where a lot of the product challenges come from, because we have this sort of beautiful viral loop. Instead, it's a lot more around, this is a retention product, right? We need to retain users and we need to convert them from going, you know, from our free plan to our paid subscription, you know, either monthly or annually. So the product problems between the two business models in many ways are different. There's also a lot of similarities, right? You got to create a great product experience that's engaging, whether you're a consumer advertising business or you're a B2B SaaS product, but the you know, sort of the levers, I guess, that grow the business are different. And so I think the emphasis on those, that the type of product work that most of the team works on, I think changes depending on the business model.
Got it. In that sense, then I think you touched upon, I really loved your career accelerating movements and how do you create them. Just love that phrase that you put out there. You touched upon this about translating your experiences across, you know, all your different career points. How were you able to translate your experience per se when you moved across these companies, in the sense where there's something that you had to learn afresh, or what has been the common theme across these experiences as well on the other side?
Yeah, you know, I think at the end of the day, really strong product managers, product, you know, people prioritize the right problems to solve, and then they, you know, identify the best solution to solve those problems. So regardless of what industry you're in, regardless of the business model, like, you have to deeply understand the target market that you're going after and the needs and the behaviors and the, you know, of that market. And then you have to figure out, okay, how do I solve problems for these users based on their needs and do it better than anyone else can? And so I think the core, what that means is, you know, at the very core, it's a couple different skills. One, it's strategic thinking, right? It's prioritization of the right problems to solve for your target customers that are going to allow you to win. So there's a component of strategic thinking, which is really a lot around prioritization and what's going to help you win within the target market you're going after. There's a whole bucket around what, you know, is referred to as product sense, right? The sort of ability to partner with design and engineering to create a winning product solution to whatever the prioritized problem is that you've, you know, decided on. And then, you know, leadership skills, to which essentially says, how do you inspire people? How do you get people excited? How do you get them to want to, you know, work on your sort of winning solution? And then lastly is, you know, analytical thinking, which is, you know, how do we make sure that we're constantly testing and iterating and learning and testing and iterating and learning? And so I think it doesn't really matter what industry you're in, you know, the core kind of components of sort of great product management, which ultimately I think leads up to great product leadership, you know, stays the same. I think there are certainly industry specific nuances that you have to learn on the job. In my case, going from financial services to enterprise software to a consumer marketplace, and now a PLG kind of SaaS company, there's nuances, but I think regardless, those kind of same skill sets, you know, are required to be successful.
Awesome. And in that, in some of the things that you mentioned, were there anything else you want to add from what's your superpowers been across all of these?
Yeah, I think, you know, the number one job, I think, for any product leader is to create the clarity around product vision and strategy, and then ensure that, you know, everyone is executing in service of that vision and strategy. And so the times I'd say when my teams have been most successful are when that's incredibly clear and I've done my job, and they're empowered to own, you know, all the day-to-day decisions around how we're going to execute against this, you know, strategy and service of a vision. And the times when my teams have been less successful and have been when, you know, I haven't created that clarity around vision and strategy. And so what happens is, you know, people either don't know, how does my work layer up into something bigger? Why am I working on this thing over here? And that person's working on this thing over there. And the dots are not connected. And so then, you know, no one really knows who they're supposed to be partnering with. If there's dependencies, no one really knows what are the trade-offs that we need to make on a day-to-day basis. And so, you can feel it in the way that teams operate. They feel very siloed in nature. And so, you know, I think, the times that I've not done that successfully, you can really feel it in the team dynamic and ultimately in the products that we're delivering to market. So I think that's the common theme, is just how important it is to create that clarity around vision and strategy, and then to really get the teams to be executing successfully in service of this really clear and articulated vision and strategy, I think is sort of the unlock to high performing product teams that ultimately deliver impact.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you for that. And in this process, did you think you have to make any personal or professional sacrifices in order to become a CPO? How do you kind of view that?
Yeah, I was fortunate. I had children late in life. So I was already the CPO at Glassdoor when I had my first child. And then I was about a year into my role at Calendly when I had my second child. And so, you know, pros and cons around when you have children in your career. But I think for me, what that meant was all the years leading up to, you know, getting the CPO role, I could be really selfish with my time, and I could work on nights and weekends when I needed to. And, you know, I didn't have to ruthlessly prioritize like you do when you're a parent. And so I think, you know, there's also a lot of cons for having children when you're later in life. But at least in terms of getting to CPO, I didn't have a lot of trade-offs to make, because I, you know, at least as it relates to having children, because I didn't have children yet. I think, you know, now that I have children, I think it, you know, on some levels, I think it actually makes me a better leader. You have to ruthlessly prioritize. You have to figure out how to get the same amount done in less time. And I think it, you know, for me personally, it makes me appreciate my job a lot. Maybe more, right? Because, you know, children are incredible and amazing and also exhausting. And so you spend a weekend with them and you loved every minute of it. And you're also very happy to get back to work on Monday morning and have a bit of a mental break. And so I think in some ways it's made me, you know, a better leader. But I think at the end of the day, this whole sort of notion of balance in my mind is impossible to achieve. I think you're always doing one better than the other. And there are times when I'm a better mother and there are times when I'm a better CPO. And I've just sort of tried to give myself grace of, you know, it's a season, right? There's a season for everything, and I won't have young children forever and I won't have this job forever. And so I think just being at peace with the fact that you're never going to have this perfect balance and harmony. You're going to be always leaning into being better at one or the other, and trying to give myself grace is the way that I've tried to approach motherhood and in this role.
Oh, that's very well said. Thank you for that. And fast forward, let's say 5 years down the lane, how do you think this chief product officer role might change if it does?
It's a good question. The best companies are product-led companies, right? And that's not product-led growth as a business model. Like companies where product is at the forefront, right? Really leading the charge in terms of how the business evolves. And so I think if anything, this role is going to become only more and more important over time as that sort of continues to play out. And I think CPOs and product leaders and product managers are all going to continue to be in high demand. If anything, I think because many companies are moving to this kind of product-led model, I think the responsibilities of a product manager and product leaders has evolved to not just be about the product, but to really have to think about the product as a function of the business. And so I think it will become a really great starting ground for future CEOs because many of the types of decision making that has to be done when you're in a product leadership role resemble that of what you would do in a CEO role. So I think if anything, it's just going to continue to be more important, and CPOs and product leaders and product managers will continue to be in high demand.
Well, that's awesome. And maybe one last question: what headline would Annie Pearl make beyond a chief product officer? Like, where do you want to go beyond this?
I love giving back in the form of coaching, mentoring, advising. All of that fun stuff. And I get just so much joy out of, when helping someone get through a hard problem where I go, hey, I've seen that before. I experienced that back in, at my startup, or I experienced that back at when I was a CPO at Glassdoor. And so, I could imagine a world, I would love a world where I get to continue that work in a more formal capacity, one day in the future.
Elizabeth, you heard that, right? So we just can't let go of Annie anymore. So... And maybe just to wrap this up, one last thing. Any other advice, Annie, to the women in directors, who are directors or VPs? Anything else you want to add?
I think the common sort of theme across my career that I touched on at the beginning is just, identify what are those things in your skill set, in your experiences where there's gaps. And not gaps in the sense of, oh, it's a resume and I need to fill it, but where you really truly believe if you acquired those skills, you'd be able to be a better future CPO or future VP of product. And I think getting really clear with yourself on how am I going to go acquire these skills or acquire these experiences. And it may be in non-traditional ways, and it may not feel like the right corporate ladder. I think Sheryl Sandberg has the great quote around careers being a jungle gym. And I, intentionally or not, I think I've followed that as part of my career, kind of going from opportunity to opportunity through that lens. And so, yeah, I just encourage folks to get clear on what those pieces are, and then create a path that gets you there.
That's awesome. Thank you so much again for your time. Really, really appreciate it.
Rashmi, such an interesting conversation with Annie. I really liked her advice to think clearly about what skill set or experience you want to add to your portfolio when thinking about your next position. Just the perspective of understanding yourself and being intentional. For our next episode, you're speaking with Kataki Rao, Chief Product Officer at Data AI. One of the things that I love about this interview is her touching on being an introvert and how she has had to modify her approach in areas to succeed and protect her own energy. Any tidbits from that interview that you'd like to share?
She brings in a lot of positivity, I thought. She encourages you to build your competency, which can help you find a leader who trusts you to take the next big leap. It is fascinating for me as well to know about how she overcame her struggle being an introvert. There are also very few leaders who talk about listening as one of their superpowers. And I will end with her own words: if it's a sacrifice, don't do it.
So true. Hope you all will join us for the next episode to hear more.
Thank you for listening. And thanks also to our partners, Discover, Google, Meta, and Upwork, who provide annual support for the work of Women in Product and our community. This podcast is an original production of Women in Product. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a review so that others can discover us. Or share this episode with people you know. If you have any questions or suggestions for future guests or topics, you can reach us at podcast@womenpm.org.